I think I was very lucky by being at the right place at the right time, because the same thing now would be so much more competitive. It's easy to invest a lot of time into it. It doesn't feel like work. Isn't that what Tim Ferriss also said, that if it doesn't feel like work, then you kind of don't count it to the 4 hours?
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've invited what's known as a super affiliate onto the show, Robert Brand from Email Tool Tester. Robert has generated millions of dollars of sales for the people that he acts as an affiliate for, mainly in the software field. And you should listen to this podcast if you're interested in finding out what it takes to be an attractive prospect for people like Robert, who are able to generate so much revenue for your business. Even if you're not in software, affiliates are in many different sectors. So hopefully we'll find out a bit today about what could be a marketing channel that you're missing out on for the moment. So, Robert, thanks very much for coming on the show. Maybe you could just introduce yourself at a high level and tell us where you are in the world.
Yeah. Hi, James. I'm very excited to be on your podcast. Where I'm in the world is Barcelona. I'm not Spanish, I'm German. So I chose Barcelona as my location to live at. Yeah, maybe you could call my business a lifestyle business. I got started in 2010 after having worked for an email marketing agency, which gave me a lot of the skills that I could then put to good use in my journey as an entrepreneur. So what got me started really was, I'm not sure if people still read the 4-Hour Workweek. I'm not even sure if you know this book, but I certainly did read it. And it gave me the kick in the butt that I needed at that time to really get going and start my own business. Yeah, it gave me the framework it explained what a lifestyle business even was, how you could run it location independently, and you could make the business work for you rather than you doing the grind in the business. That was the kicker that started me. And the business that I started was based on a need that I had myself, because I wanted to build a website and I wasn't great with tech. I'm not a programmer or anything. And back in 2010, WordPress wasn't really that big. And I was looking for systems to build a website with. And I found website builders like Squarespace, Weebly, Jimdo, all these kinds of website builders. But I hardly found any information on the web about them. So what I did was just build a free website with one of the website builders, put together some information. And I really mainly did it for myself as a learning experiment. But then I realized that I got traffic through Google. And it got more and more. Like at first, it was, after a few weeks, it was maybe 100 per month. And then I discovered the possibility of using affiliate marketing to monetize that traffic. And it did monetize. So after, I don't know, maybe a month, I made the first sale through my website.
Well, let me just ask you about, do I know about 4-Hour Workweek? Hell yeah. In 2008, I got fired, so did my wife, and we went and lived in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, because of Tim Ferriss's book. We were spending pesos and earning dollars, or trying to at the stage. So maybe if people just haven't heard of the book, it's kind of controversial because it gives you this idea that you can work for 4 hours and then you can just sort of kick back the rest of the time. Maybe it's for slackers, is it? What did you take away from the book most?
I think I didn't really work 4 hours per week, although I talked to someone just recently who said he used that book to build a business, and for a few years he worked 4 hours per week. But it's not really that you work so little. It's more to work on your own terms, that you build that business, an asset that is generating revenue for you while you are sleeping, while you're doing other things. You build it up in such a way that it's pretty resilient and can do the work for you. That's the main idea. Because before, I think being self-employed meant more working with clients in my mind. to work for someone and then charge them by the hour. And the book completely changed my thinking around that.
And what were you working as? What was your job and what made you want to get out of it?
I was an account manager. So I ran email marketing programs for customers. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was also after 4 years, I didn't love it anymore. So it was a good moment for a change and just to work on my own terms. That was the most attractive thing here.
Yeah, it's interesting what motivates people. I remember once I met someone at a Tony Robbins seminar in London, and he had a range of hotels. He was from Romania. He was in his mid-20s. And I was like, why? How did you get here? How did you own these hotels? Like, he says, yeah. You know, my thing is I'm just super lazy. I absolutely hate working. And I hate working so much that I figured out if I got these credit cards, I could buy this flat. And I bought the flat and then I could sell the flat. And eventually he worked his way up to getting. So his motivation was being super lazy, which I thought was the best answer I've ever heard to that, which was like any vice can be turned to positivity. So I'm very interested in your first sale. I remember my first sale online. It was pretty exhilarating. What was your first check and where did it come from or who was it from?
It was from a website builder called Jimdo. I put the affiliate link on this website that I built, the free website builder, where Google sent me traffic. I don't know who, but someone bought through my link and I earned these 30 euros back then. And then it quickly accelerated. I think the following month was already 100 euros. And from that, it just kept growing.
Wow. Awesome. So if you're like me, I think my first sale was 10 euros online. I immediately went out and spent 150 euros celebrating with my wife, dinner and everything. What did you do with the 100 euros or were you more circumspect? Because there's quite a big difference from 100 euro to whatever, to 2, 3, 4, 5 grand a month you need to live. So
yeah, I didn't party too wild. I'm German, so I probably put it in my piggy bank. I just waited until it grew. But the thing I actually did after 6 months, maybe a little bit more than 6 months of running the website, I handed in my notice.
Wow.
For my old job. So that was a more eventful.
So let's not assume too much here. Let's do a bit of a glossary on the terms. Let's start with the basics. So what's an affiliate? Why would someone pay you for writing a blog? How does it work?
I'm an affiliate publisher. So I have a content website and I write about certain topics that companies are interested in. So they provide an affiliate link that they give me and I use it in my content. And whenever somebody clicks that affiliate link and this person ends up buying something through my website, then I would get rewarded.
And this was, I guess, before YouTube. So all the YouTube influencers these days say, hey, go to whatever, Surfshark and use my code and they get paid. And this was a precursor to that. So this one, there was no real video on the internet. I don't remember in 2010, was there? Maybe a bit. But this was all true, just blogs and blog trafficking. Was that it?
Mainly written content, yeah. But I did start with video maybe in 2011 maybe even. So I pretty quickly started producing videos because it's just the best way of presenting a software tool.
So after a couple of months, you're up to a couple of $100 a month, I guess, and you quit after 6 months, which is pretty quick. So I guess if you're listening to this thinking, wow, this sounds so easy, 6 months of blogging in the evening, and then I can quit my job. Were you just early? So you were lucky. Is this opportunity still here today? Or is it just really impossible these days? You can't do it because it's so competitive.
I think I was very lucky by being at the right place at the right time, because the same thing now would be so much more competitive. Of course, the market is much bigger, so you have a bigger audience. But I think overall, it would be much more difficult to get into this market. But there are new markets now that are maybe as easy as it used to be for me.
So when you made that first bit of money, like, did you then decide, okay, I'm going to every night spend 4 hours doing this? Did you get more and more motivated? How much time did you have to put in? Or was it 4 hours a week? You didn't really care. It just kind of fell into your lap. Or did you have to make a plan?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, while I was working on it next to my real job, probably it was something like 4 hours. But I mean, you get incredibly motivated when you see your thing growing, the thing that you started, and it's just attracting more visitors and attracting more sales. That's something you get very passionate about. At least I did. I mean, it's easy to invest a lot of time into it. It doesn't feel like work. So, I think, isn't that what Tim Ferriss also said, that that if it doesn't feel like work, then you kind of don't count it to the 4 hours.
Right. Which is true for anyone who's got a passion, I think, for business, and you start to see it going. So you took that step where you went from 4 hours to 40 hours a week, and instantly you got 10 times the revenue. That's the way it works, right? Effort in, effort out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, not quite, but revenue is probably 40 times higher than at the very beginning.
And so tell us about the business today. I don't know what you're comfortable talking about, but like, how many people are in the company? How many sales, dollar value of sales do you generate for your affiliates today?
So our company, we are 10 people, 11, including me. Yeah, we have our office here. So I'm not even sure if I can call it a lifestyle business if you have your own office and employees and all that. But to me, it certainly feels like a lifestyle business. And in terms of revenue, we are at 6 figures every month. Not the super high 6 figures, but yeah, rather the lower end. That is our revenue. But the revenue that we generate for the companies that we work with is even higher.
Yeah. Just before we move off lifestyle business is sometimes a derogatory term. Now that you've said it, it just occurred to me, let's call it a business with style.
I like that.
That sounds better. Yeah, yeah. Why make it a slog? It's just a business. You make money like any other, and it's just got a bit of style. You're designing it to support your lifestyle.
Excellent. Business with style.
Okay, I'm gonna trademark that.
Yeah, yeah, you should.
So you're generating millions of dollars of sales for... Tell me, for who? For software companies, CRMs, blog platforms? What's the spread look like?
These days, we primarily, my primary business is email tool testers. So we work with email marketing services, companies like ActiveCampaign, MailerLite, Brevo, you name it. All the known email marketing services. So we work with them, with HubSpot as well, like more CRM-y systems. And yeah, we review them and create a lot of content around their products. And that is how we bring people to our website, because they find relevant information for the products they want to use or are already using. Yeah, it's not all. We also provide a lot of tutorials and just information all around the topic of email marketing to make our websites the most relevant in the market.
I'm getting a picture here. So you're creating guides and tools. I guess a lot of it is sort of how-to type material. Is that right? I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's fair to say. Yeah.
So maybe the help documentation these companies should have written themselves, you're writing for them and helping people along. So let's think about this. Now, I mean, it sounds like a dream to me. You have hardworking, talented 10 people out there creating content to try and generate leads for your business. That sounds fantastic. I'll take 4 of those, please. So, but surely there must be attributes of a business that's good for you as an affiliate. Like there must be a certain size. And the great thing is you don't even get paid unless they get paid, right? You're not on anyone's salary. They don't have to give you a laptop or any of this stuff. You're just out there and magically you're sort of generating sales for someone. Sounds way too good to be true. Well, maybe just tell me what sort of opportunity attracts you as a super affiliate?
So companies that we want to work with are generally, when I look at these companies, ideally I have heard of the company before already. So if it's a relevant player, then chances are that I want to work with said company.
Right.
If it's a smaller company, then it's also good if I have heard the name before. So in terms of branding is so important, that just to create that relevance. And of course, if I receive an email like we have created this new newsletter service and we want you to promote us, then of course I need some kind of unique perspective, a USP from them. I want to see something new that I haven't seen 100 times before. And of course, the the affiliate market, the affiliate program that they offer is also relevant for us. What kind of model are they running? I mean, there are different models like pay per sale, which is a one-off, one-time compensation, or a lifetime payment, which is, I would say it's more interactive overall.
That's sweet. No, listen, I've done lifetime deals with people in the past and we're still cutting the check like 4 or 5 years later. Okay, so you're kind of like an investor then listening to you. It's kind of a little bit like Shark Tank. Like you say, okay, there's lots of different businesses you could choose to try and promote, I guess. The one thing I heard was brand. So some sort of recognition, I guess if you've heard of it, you're guessing other people have heard of it, which makes it a little bit easier for conversion rates, maybe. Does SEO play into this? Like, do you get a view?
Yeah.
Like, what else needs to be there?
That's an important point. I would also, our team would also check the search volume for that brand. Is there already interest in the market, which has to do with branding? Is there enough people looking for that company that will then drive traffic to our website, because people are looking for reviews or tutorials around that product.
Right.
So that's also interesting. And maybe something that people would not think of immediately, but it can also play a role, is our SEO collaborations with the partners we work with. You could link to their content and they link to my content. So that can also be interesting for an affiliate.
So this dark art of SEO, which always terrifies me, what I didn't expect to hear there was sometimes, I guess, these guys help you with your SEO ranking by linking back to you as well. If they're offering to do that, they like have a partner portal, I guess some of them have, on their own website, so people can find partners. And
yeah, or just their regular blog content. I mean, I think it's fairly common that affiliates work together with the companies to boost each other a little bit in terms of SEO.
We've been talking about software. What's your awareness of, I feel like this sort of thing is very good for timeshares, holidays, flights. Have you tried any of that, or do you stay away from it for any reason? Like, what other industries use this affiliate model online?
For the sales that are not too big, because otherwise you come into sales cycles that take too long, and because the tracking happens via a cookie. So I would say things that cost like up to $500 that you can immediately purchase online.
Right.
These work well, but if it goes over that, then it becomes a bit tricky. Like enterprise software, I don't think that would work too well as an affiliate, because then it just takes too long until they finally buy. And then if the cookie, the affiliate cookie is on one computer, but the person actually buying the thing uses a completely different computer, then you won't even have the tracking. So then you hit the limits of affiliate marketing.
There's a Goldilocks zone there. Not so small that you can't make any money out of it, $10. Not so big that the sales...
If you have the volume, I guess a lot of people are making a lot of money on Amazon just by volume.
How come you're able to get this traffic when their own marketing teams can't? HubSpot, for example, the master of inbound, right? What gives you the edge over their marketing team? And they're the gold-plated content creators of the world, I guess. What edge do you have that they do not have?
It's funny you mentioned HubSpot. They compete for a lot of keywords with us. But the thing is, if HubSpot published a HubSpot review, would you trust it?
Right.
Probably not. So our advantage is, of course, being vendor independent, so we can write whatever we want, and we will do so. We will highlight all the disadvantages of a product, which if you read one of the typical comparisons of a newsletter service that compares itself with other competitors,
right,
it's not neutral and shouldn't really be high, ranked highly on Google.
Someone's just heard that. They might push back and say, well, if you're getting an affiliate link for this, what makes you neutral? Aren't you motivated to maybe say, hey, HubSpot's great? You know, I independently certify that HubSpot's great, especially when they send me a couple of grand every month for saying so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very fair question. And I see a lot of companies out there that don't seem to be so honest. So where I see the the content is heavily influenced by the affiliate dollars. I mean, we pride ourselves of not doing that, not running after the money. I mean, for that reason, we allow comments on our website and we disclose our methodology, how we review products. And mainly we are open to a dialogue. If somebody says, that's not right what you're saying, this product has these disadvantages and they are not in the review, we will add them. As a consumer of reviews, I get that it can be tricky to find good reviews. Maybe a question I have for you, because I saw these badges of G2 Captera on your website. James, how does that work for you? What are your experiences working with these platforms?
Yeah, so Captera, G2, there's a couple of them out there. They were pivotal to the how we got started as a business. So back 2014 or so, Rich, my business partner, found these because he was an IT support professional and he would buy software on the back of these tools. Like Gartner is famous for sort of higher value products, the magic quadrants, whatever they call them, review sites. And then for sort of mid-market solutions, Captera come out and a couple of the others. And so they list all the software available on their indexes, and then they allow reviews from the public, basically. So they sometimes will verify whether they're a user or not, but I'm not sure exactly how they do it. They would do that, but they would allow people to add reviews. And early on, we realized that if you focus on getting reviews from your users, that really helps you bump up the listings in these sites. And that's definitely, even today, I'm going to say about a third, maybe half or a third of our customers come from these sites. And of course, the majority of that, the reviews is only part of it. Like, so there's an algorithm where you pay the money magically and you go up the rankings, but it also factors in the number of views you have. So people will see, okay, I realize the top 10 of these are just paid placement. And then some people will sort by reviews, look for the people with the most reviews, and then get ahead. And that's what has been our USP on these sites. So we normally have way more reviews than any of the competitors, and maybe less so than it used to be. But that's because what we did initially was that we would incentivize reviews. So if people gave us a positive NPS within the product, so that's NPS is just a satisfaction survey. And if they give us a positive review, we would send them an email, say, hey, listen, thanks for that. Would you mind letting other people know at Captera.com? I'll give you $20 if you do it, you know? And it worked, you know? We were gaming the system to a certain extent in that we were asking the people we already knew who were happy, and the people who gave us a poor review, which they are out there, we'd instead get in touch with them and try and figure out what went wrong. But this meant that we got this flywheel going of reviews. Now, what everyone should realize in 2024 is that Captera now have built this into their product. So anyone who lists on Captera, Captera will actually, if you're a paying customer, will go out and get paid reviews for you. So they're incentivized reviews. That's just the way the world works, I guess. But you still have people putting their name behind it. So yeah, now this is how the industry works. So all of these review websites are kind of incentivizing people to give reviews. They're paying their users to add reviews into the site. And that's just part of the ecosystem.
There are reviews that don't seem all that useful, and maybe sometimes it's these incentivized reviews that someone only writes because they're getting paid for it, possibly.
Yeah, off air, I told you about the story of going to the Tropicana in Las Vegas. The Tropicana, God love you, Tropicana, it's a total dump. It's like it was built in the 1950s. It's falling apart as it seems. But in the reviews, you would see 20 reviews. People, my favorite place in Las Vegas. The slots are payout like nowhere else. The buffet is amazing. And then every 20th review would be like, what are these people talking about? This place is a total dump. I would never stay here again. It was overcharged and the food was terrible, blah, blah, blah. And then there'll be another 20 positive reviews. Oh, it's amazing, whatever. And of course, that was obviously review farming or whatever you call it. So you have bunches of people in a room somewhere professionally writing positive reviews. That does not happen for software products, as far as I've seen, but it, you know, happens in some industries. So there you go. The way they structure it, they have pros and cons. We definitely get useful negative feedback. So people, even if they're getting $20, they will say, hey, it's great. The support is great. It's really quick. Cons. And they'll say, in our case, like, I wish I could do a recurring purchase order, or mobile app could be faster, or whatever. And that's useful for us too, because it's quite hard for us to understand what people really want and get that feedback. So that's the way that ecosystem works, you know?
Yeah, it is tricky to find good reviews. I see that myself, like, knowing how the review industry works. When I see Forbes, for example, I try to stay clear of that result on Google and skip to something I trust more. But yeah, I guess the main thing is to look at the cons, if they are really talking about the cons as in depth as they should. And that can give you a good feel whether it's a genuine review or if it's just paid for.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like, let's take email tools. Like, the top 5 or 10 are not normally that differentiated. So a lot of them will all send email. If you want to send email, they'll all send email. By and large,
the question is whether they arrive.
Yeah, the email will get there. So what really makes you want to promote it, a tool in a saturated market, let's put it that way, where the tool is established and they all look kind of the same and they all kind of do the same thing?
At Email Tool Tester, the thing we do, and hardly anyone else is doing, is that we run deliverability tests. So we send test emails with all of these different newsletter tools, and we check if they actually arrive in the inboxes or whether they are in the promotional folder or in the spam folder or even completely disappear. So there we can see pretty big differences. So they might feel pretty similar, all these tools with similar features and all that, but then it's really the last test is really whether the emails arrive.
So you've got something, a bit of brand recognition that's good for you. They obviously have to have an affiliate program. Maybe we'll talk about that in a second. It actually has to do a good job. And I see now how you have a very practical way of delivering kind of objective comparison there. Do you actually do some work to do it? Shall we talk a bit about the monetization for you, a fancy word for how you get paid? Like, what makes a really good affiliate program that makes you motivated as an affiliate marketer?
Yeah, so the thing that you don't seem to like so much, that the recurring revenue, that is, of course, something from a business perspective, I like it. I think it's ideal for our company if we have a mix of like a one-time payment, which is a bit larger, of course. With other companies, we have this recurring revenue that makes our company more resilient because we have different kinds of income streams. But generally, if you offered me a one-time payment and a recurring fee, I would go for the recurring fee, because also it's not that we refer people that will leave the company after 2 months. With our content, we attract good customers. So that's also the reason why I'm much more keen on having these lifetime commissions, because I think the lifetime of a customer we bring is quite high.
I mean, that's also aligned with a lot of SaaS companies where you can pay a lot to acquire a customer. For us, it's certainly into the thousands of dollars. Have you any sense of how this affects the enterprise value of your business? Or do you think that way? Like, would your business be valued similar to how a SaaS business is measured then because of the recurring revenue?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, because it's a content business, so we don't really have a technology in comparison to a SaaS business that has a proprietary technology. I guess the SaaS business would win this match.
Well, maybe not beginning of 2024. I was just reading a report on it and all the valuations have tanked, which is fine. But I don't see why not, though, because like, it's obviously a stable income. It's an SEO play, I'm hearing, for the sort of SEO risk, I guess you'd have to filter in that.
Yeah. And it's becoming more and more relevant, this risk in recent years.
Yeah. What's your take on how AI is going to affect the standard podcast question now? I have this fear that the web is just going to turn into a sea of nonsense now with just AI generated blah, regurgitation.
Yeah. I mean, Google has to find a way to devalue this AI generated content. That is, of course, for them, it's a huge problem. that the SERPs currently get flooded with all this content. And I think that's also why we are seeing so many fluctuations in the rankings. It feels like there's a Google update every couple of weeks.
Well, how is it going to affect? Does it worry you, what's happening in SEO?
It does worry me to some extent. There's the danger, of course, that in a few years' time, AI is going to answer all these questions. And you don't even need to go to a website.
Sure.
That is, of course, a danger. That's why we are trying to work against that. We are now offering also services, like an email marketing consultation, for example, you can book on our website, trying to offer something that AI can never offer in this quality, like the human touch and all that. But it's still work in progress. I'm not sure how to scale consultation calls. That's kind of difficult.
For managing an affiliate program, what sort of platforms do you prefer, or do you recommend that companies look at if they want to attract the best affiliates?
There are different platforms. So there are platforms that only provide the software that you can do your tracking, but they don't have a network. Let's say Impact, for example, or PartnerStack. These are two platforms that also have a network of affiliates. So if you as a company sign up with them, you have access to their affiliates, and you can promote your product to these affiliates and hope that a lot of them will sign up and will want to become your affiliates. That is the advantage of such a network. But if you already have a good, you have your people, you know who's going to promote you, then you can just work with a software like Tapfiliate, Post Affiliate Pro. These are two platforms. I think that are not that expensive. But yeah, I think that's the main thing you need to decide, whether you want to tap into existing affiliates and have the software to track it, or whether you want to more or less run it on your own and just buy the software. It's also a SaaS product, of course, so it's a subscription, but then you can run it yourself.
So I heard Host Affiliate Pro, if you want to do it for yourself, and
Post then Host Affiliate Pro, Tapfiliate. Recently, I found a new one, Redditus, which even has a free plan, which I found interesting. So up to $5,000 MRR, you can use their platform for free. So maybe for smaller SaaS businesses, that could be interesting. And yeah, the big platforms that are relevant to SaaS, I would say, is PartnerStack and Impact.
I guess you keep an eye on these marketplaces for opportunities. Is it just dial the commission up to 90% and you'll get everyone? Or for you, does it have to be related to email deliverability? Is that the only thing you consider, or what makes you attracted?
I mean, we have a very narrow focus now. It's mainly email marketing services and CRMs. So it needs to somehow fit into that niche. Otherwise, yeah, even if they pay 1,000% commission, it may not be that interesting, because we are not able to acquire the traffic that is relevant for a product that doesn't really fit into our niche. But there are other affiliates that are broader and can take on more different niches. For us, that's one reaction to Google changes, AI looming, that we narrow down and really become the masters of our niche, which AI hopefully can't.
So if you're listening to this and you have a CRM or an email tool, maybe it's worth checking out emailtooltester.com. So just to finish up then, maybe just tell us a bit about your services that you're offering now. Who is an ideal customer for you, and what do you do for them?
So one of our services is an email deliverability audit. So if you're sending out newsletters, but you have the feeling that sometimes people tell you that I didn't receive it, and you have the feeling that maybe it gets stuck in the spam folders or doesn't arrive at all, then you can book this service that we check what is happening. We're going to run different tests and see where these emails are landing, whether they are actually arrive or if they are stopped by the spam folder. And we're also looking at email authentication. Is that all set up? There's a lot of changes happening right now at the moment. And yeah, that is one service, which is, yeah, it's not suitable for very small companies, I think. But yeah, as soon as you have a subscriber list of 10,000, 20,000 plus, then I think it's worth it if you are able to monetize your list well.
I had a podcast with Jens Sonnenberg, and he also was highlighting as well what's a big change happened in the 1st of February, 2024. Gmail and Yahoo are getting a lot tougher in what they require in order to get into their inbox. And this is a much more of a live issue. Even if you're not sending marketing emails, even let's say you take payment by credit card in some way, all of your follow-up transactional emails could now not be delivered, which could have an impact on your revenue. So it's something even finance teams have to be worried about now, is change. So maybe check that out. That episode should have come out a couple of weeks ago. Just Google Jens Sonnenberg and you'll find out about that. So Robert, thanks very much. How can people reach out to you? Who would you like to hear from, and how can they get in touch?
I'd like to hear from interesting products that we could talk about on our website, and otherwise just geeking out on email marketing is fine too. I can be reached on LinkedIn or Twitter, X at Robert Brundle. That's my username there. And yeah, these are the channels that work best for me. If anybody is interested in getting started with email marketing, at Email Tool Tester, we have a free ebook that can get you started. That's how people can reach me. Sometimes even on live chat. It's my little guilty pleasure. I don't know why, but I'd like to be online a couple of hours per day if I have the time. Then I will be online in the live chat on Email Tool Tester.
Robert, you're a special person. I'm manning the live chat, I'll tell you. It's one of those things, when you get someone to reply, it's great, but when they don't reply, it's like talking to no one. I don't know, it drives me crazy. Maybe I need to talk to my shrink.
There are all these people on my website, and I don't know who it is, and I have no idea about them. And then they, through live chat, they ask me questions, and then suddenly I get a better picture of the person who is there on the website.
Awesome.
They're real people.
So awesome.
Even though they would suspect that I'm a bot.
Very good. Yeah. Well, you're definitely not a bot. And if you are, you're very well done.
Pretty good,
I have to
one.
Say. It's fooled right. Me totally. All right, Robert, thanks very much for being on the podcast. It was very interesting to talk to a genuine super affiliate. I hope you found this podcast useful. If you'd like to hear more interviews like this, this is a little bit more marketing focused, but I think it is relevant if you're trying to grow your revenue channels. If you're thinking about new revenue channels, building out an affiliate program is something that certainly a lot of companies should consider. So please let me know if you like this. You can leave a comment below or email me, james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Okay, thanks very much, Robert, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thank you. That was fun.